8 or 10,000.
Shit.
The Wire.
So this week, the Pop-Up Globe announced it'll be returning to Auckland for a fourth year of Shakespeare productions. However, it has attracted public backlash after announcing an all-male production of The Taming of the Shrew and framing it around the hashtag MeToo movement. The Pop-Up Globe's founder and artistic director, Dr. Miles Gregory, initially said that in the age of Weinstein, hashtag MeToo and hashtag Time's Up, it feels right for the Pop-Up Globe to reflect current conversations in the world through ambitious and thought-provoking programs. So producer Stewart talked to Dr. Gregory yesterday, just after he had issued an apology for any offence caused. He started by asking him what we can expect in the upcoming Auckland season.
Well, in our forthcoming Auckland season, we have four plays, The Taming of the Shrew, Measure for Measure, Richard III, and Hamlet. And the theme that unites these plays is the abuse of power. It's an exciting season of work. Shakespeare's work is always controversial, and it's a work often focused on gender, and we're looking forward to entertaining audiences in this season.
There has been a bit of public backlash. Is this something that you were expecting when you were putting together this season?
Well, I think theatre always responds to the world around it, and good art always creates good debate. But there is a fine line between encouraging conversation and offending people. And in the press release we issued on Tuesday, we crossed that line. I crossed that line in some comments I made about the context for why we're making work about the abuse of power. And we've had a lot of feedback. There has been a really huge debate. Earlier today I've made a full apology for my comments. I'm very sorry for the offence that my words have caused. I think theatre is fundamentally about celebrating the diversity of the human condition. You know, it's about respecting and celebrating the rights and the freedoms of all individuals. I think we're a young organisation, Pop-Up Globe. We're learning and we don't get everything right. And it's pretty clear that this week I haven't got things right. And I'm very sorry.
Moving away specifically from the use of the Me Too movement, do you think casting entirely men in a production which is sort of intending to deal with abuses of power is a mistake?
Well, it certainly excites a lot of debate, and we're listening very closely to the feedback both from the theatre community and the community at large. And at this time we're reviewing our casting and considering how we can make the work that we make better and better. We've entertained over 450,000 people at Pop-Up Globe since we started just a couple of years ago. People have loved our work, and we're really grateful for all that support. We're particularly grateful that people care so much about what we do that they will speak up and give us feedback when we get it wrong. So we are reviewing our policies and the art we make, and it's a time for reflection for our company. We had a very long three-hour company meeting this morning for our company here at Pop-Up Globe, where everyone expressed their views. We had a really occurred and serious debate about, as a company, what kind of work we want to make, and we're reflecting on that at the moment.
Last year you did a really excellent all-female production of Julius Caesar. Why was there no all-female production in this year's programme?
Last year we made a production of Julius Caesar that was gender-reversed. There were 11 women and 2 men in the company, and all of the roles in the text that are written for men were played by women, and vice versa. We are an entirely unsubsidised company. We don't receive any money from the government, unlike virtually every other professional theatre company, really in the world, actually. So we have to rely on ticket sales to fund the work we make. Last season, we were able to gather enough money together to make an extra production alongside the 4 that we had, so the 5 productions in the season. But this year, we don't have the resources to do it. And that's why there isn't that element of programming this year. We wish that there could be, but we don't have the money.
But could there have been 3 other productions and then the 4th one could have been gender-reversed again, for example?
Well, without getting into too much sort of detail, that we make repertory theatre, which means we have 2 companies of actors who make work. And in every season since the launch of our company, in line with an artistic vision document that governs the sort of art we make, one of our companies that makes 2 plays has been all male, and the other company, which also makes 2 plays, has been a mixed company of men and women. So we have 1 all-male company and 1 mixed company of men and women, and they each make 2 plays each. And that is a very expensive exercise. It costs the company a huge amount of money. You can imagine how many staff. I mean, we employ about 80 staff here during the season. So it costs a lot, and we want to make the best out we can. But we're like every organisation, we struggle with money sometimes. We don't have the money we want to be able to work, make the work we'd like to.
Right, of course. Now that makes total sense. Is historical accuracy still a valid reason for excluding women in productions in this day and age, do you think?
You know, that is exactly the kind of debate that we're having at the moment. And it's a really good conversation to have. So I think that's a brilliant question, and I'm reflecting on the answer to it at the moment.
Right, so it's the start of an ongoing conversation then.
Well, yeah, I think that's how it has to be, isn't it? That, you know, in the artists put stuff out into the world, and the world gives the artist feedback on what the artist is doing. Artists want to make work that creates a space for conversation and debate. And you can test that by considering the opposite. You know, do artists want to make work that nobody talks about, that doesn't inspire any conversation? Of course they don't. You know, artists want people to examine the meaning of life and what we do as people through the medium of their work. So I think it's brilliant that there's this conversation. And I think really that it's a very interesting conversation to have, and we're listening very closely, very closely to the conversation.
What do you have to say to the people who are saying that they're going to boycott this season or not come because of what's happened in the last 24 or so hours?
Oh, well, I think people have to make their, of course, must do what they feel is right. I think that's the first thing. The second thing, though, is I'd say that those people are making their views, they're expressing their views to us, and we are listening to what they're saying, and we're reflecting on our casting and what we're going to do this season at the moment.
The Wire.
I don't know, and frankly, the whole thing gives me the heebie-jeebies.
The Wire.
Dr. Gregory's full statement of apology is available on the Pop-Up Globe's Facebook and Twitter, and it should also be noted that the references to Weinstein and Me Too have now also been removed from the marketing material for the season. Producer Stuart also had a chance to talk to performer and comedian Penny Ashton, who wrote a thought-provoking response to the Pop-Up Globe's casting decisions and marketing for the spin-off.
I've historically had objections to their all-male casting. Like, when I first got the casting call through my agent for the first season, I just looked at the ratio and went, well, no, I'm not doing that. But, you know, but still, that is his right, as I say, to cast who he wants, despite it being based on erroneous research. But the thing about this one was the fact that he was willing to use women's pain and suffering as a marketing tool. I mean, he's since apologised, and that has been removed from the website, but I'm a little cynical about that because he was prepared to do that in the first place. But, you know, it's good that he's learned, it's good that he's listened. But that was the main problem for everybody, that, you know, yeah, the fact that he was willing to trade on pain and suffering and even mentioning the word Weinstein while promoting a show, calling it proto-feminist and not having a single woman in it. So it was more around the marketing being utterly tone-deaf for this season than anything else. But as far as the casting is concerned too, it's like to justify all-male casting in a historic sense is just very painful for women as well, because it's harking back with nostalgia to a time where women were utterly sidelined and, you know, still regarded as property and couldn't vote, obviously, in this 125th year of women's suffrage in New Zealand. I mean, it was just sort of mind-boggling. Even people who weren't that bothered by the traditional casting aspect still could not quite believe his marketing angle here. And that was the big thing, so I'm glad that he has listened to that.
Right, so the main thing was the way it was marketed. So do you think if, for example, Me Too and Weinstein weren't referenced, it would be acceptable in 2018?
I mean, I don't think so. For me, the moral outrage that came from that, and, you know, it's interesting, isn't it, that we feel that we can get angry about things like that, whereas actually just representation is like, oh, well, that's his right because it's his company. But I still feel that, you know, in this day and age, no, I don't think it's appropriate. You look to the Globe in London that has, you know, when they have all-male casting, they have all-female casting. The other thing that was very frustrating, and be curious to say what he says in this, I tried to ask him about this on the project, but he danced around it, is that, excuse me, I've got something in my throat, I'm so angry, that he did cast an all-female Julius Caesar, which, you know, I thought was a really great idea. Julius Caesar wore a white pantsuit. They actually referenced Me Too and Time's Up, essentially, in a very appropriate manner, because it was about that. But he has alluded to in the past that he doesn't think all women's shows will sell. And Julius Caesar played the only nights it ever played was Monday and Tuesday nights and the occasional Saturday and Wednesday matinee. It never got a prime time spot. And then he used that as justification to say that women's shows don't sell, say, for example, as the all-male Midsummer Night's Dream, which, you know, hardly anyone's heard of, isn't popular at all. And then to measure those two against each other as a metric of the taste for women in entertainment, I think, was incredibly disingenuous. And it seems like an active ploy to ensure that he was proven correct, even if it was based on erroneous, you know, premise.
Do you think there's a way to make historical accuracy work anymore?
I think as long as you do the reverse as well, you know, like an all-male, like, you know, there was an all-male, but what was it, importance of being earnest, a lot of gay guys in it. That was an interesting concept. But we need to have the other side of the coin as well. I mean, this is what it's all about. It's all about representation, you know. It's also like, you know, people sort of saying, oh, we have to get all minorities out there, but women aren't a bloody minority. Also lacking, of course, is minorities, but women make up over 50% of the population. So we're sick of being treated like a minority, and we should be given scope. And also, you know, Shakespeare's got some amazing female characters. And I didn't actually go to any of the shows. I don't want to sound like Mike Hosking criticising the spin-off because he hasn't watched it, spin-off TV. But like, I didn't go to the all-male cast because of this, but I've had some friends who went who said that a lot of the female characters, you know, were portrayed. Oh, I don't want to, yeah, I don't want to diss the men that are in there because there's some beautiful men who are good friends of mine that are performing. But I feel like only a woman can really portray the full power and nuance of a woman in the way that, you know, it should be.
There's been quite a response to your article, and you've been called some certain things online, and so I thought I'd better check with a degree of cynicism whether you hate men.
My husband is the most adorable man in the whole wide world, and he has been very tolerant as my phone goes ping, 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 ping for the last 3 days, just going off on cycles and playing PlayStation and just giving me hugs from time to time, posting on Facebook about how fucking awesome I am. So he is somebody that I do not hate. A lot of the men that act in those shows, as I say, are good friends, and they produce amazing work. And I'm not against all-male casting, but I just want the flip side to be represented as well. And just work, just... You know, we're not a bloody minority. No, I don't hate men. What else? I'm not a screeching harridan.
Not a feminazi.
No, well, I am, but hurrah. I hate this. I hate those terms. And all the people that comment with just the most willful ignorance who haven't looked into the background of things and, you know, go, oh, there was a Julius Caesar, what's wrong with you? But don't know about, you know, the things around that and stuff like that. I just think, as I have said too, that, you know, he's an incredible dude, Miles. Like, what has he created? You know, it's amazing. But at the same time, he squished the Shakespeare Ecology in Auckland, for example, the Summer Shakespeare that got cancelled, which was going to be an all-female Shakespeare in this 150th year of suffrage. But when they switched their dates up, they were like, well, we can't go up against them. So, you know, he has created this incredible thing, huge vision, thousands of people have flocked to it. But he seems to be sort of doing it at the detriment of the very community that creates these pieces, which is the actors. So I wish that he would think about the very people that he is utilising to implement this vision and be more inclusive with it, because his vision is bloody amazing and he's done an incredible job. But, you know, with great power comes great responsibility.
And I believe since all of this has come out, there has been an all-female production of The Taming of the Shrew announced for a tour.
Yes.
What was it like to hear about that?
Do you know what? It was kind of amazing. Like, I feel like that somebody would have written a piece like mine, probably in the spin-off, or somewhere like that, if I hadn't done it. I mean, as soon as my husband actually alerted me to the fact that this was happening, which goes to show how great he is, and my blood really did start boiling over, and my actual heart rate increased, and I immediately emailed the Herald, and I immediately emailed the spin-off, and, you know, and went from there. But I feel like somebody else would have done that. But at the same time, yeah, it's like, wow. It's really nice to know that something that you have articulated has possibly made a difference, along with, you know, James, Pip, like all sorts of different people that are making noise about it, which I am hugely grateful of. And I just don't think they quite realise the level of rage. You know, and I've got 44 years of being excluded to be pissed off about, and it just gets to a point where you just go, you know what? Fuck you, people. I'm going to say something about it. Also, I am fortunate because I obviously have no lack of things to say, but I am self-employed. Always have been. So I create my own work, I tour my own work. Oh look, feminist retellings of classical literature in Jane Austen and Charles Dickens. So I don't have to put up with shit because no one's casting me anyway. I do it myself.
It's the benefit of being self-employed.
Yes, yeah, exactly. You know, like I've been self-employed for 18 years doing my own thing. So, you know, I'm very proud of that and therefore feel proud that I can make a difference to people who are worried about being able to be employed, whereas I don't have to be. So I can stick my head up above the parapet because he's never casting me. again. Also, I really like microphones. I don't feel the need to shred one's voice in the sake of authenticity when you're actually, you know, driving somewhere and using a toilet.
Kei te whakarongo koe ki te wire, marunga irirangi pō.
The Wire.
Kei te whakarongo koe ki te wire, indeed. You are listening to 95BFM, The Friday Wire, and we're coming to our close, but before we close, we have to take your opinions in, because what is a news bulletin without other people's opinion? Without a Twitter poll? What is that?
Position is the name of the segment. I think it's meant to have an intro at some point.
I mean, one day.
I mean, is my voice not an intro enough? Was that intro not intro
enough?
I
think you are always enough, Kelly. You are always enough.
Okay, tell me about the poll.
Okay, so the poll starts with, in 2018, is it appropriate for Shakespeare's The Taming of the Shrew to be performed by an all-male cast? And people who said yes, 15% said yes, 85% said no, which, yay?
Welcome, Amelia.
Yeah, hi.
Oh, right, I actually need to do that. Hi,
yeah,
Amelia.
Yeah, hi, I'm here as well. So we're talking about this?
Yes.
From my perspective, I have no problem with an all male version of anything Shakespeare. There's many reasons why you could do that. Ooh. I think the way that they framed it in their publicity is cooked. It's like, why? That's when it becomes problematic.
That's when the issue is contentious.
Yeah. Because in what I just don't understand. Yeah. It's just exasperating that they've chosen the Shakespeare play that is both famously bad and famously misogynistic. And then they've said, and we've given it an all-male cast to make it a comment about Me Too. It just seems poorly thought out and essentially a publicity stunt.
Right.
People have been trying to reframe Taming of the Shrew since it came out, essentially, going, oh, this one of Shakespeare is weirdly misogynistic. People were saying that in, like, the 17th century.
So you think having gone back, if they had just said, we're doing the Taming of the Shrew and we're doing an all-male cast and come along, that would be, that's okay, you know, it's when they shifted into that. And we're going to use Me Too.
Well, I mean, I think you have to give some reason why it would be an all-male cast. Like, we want to do a historically blah, 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 we're doing these things.
I don't know, I get tired of the whole, let's be historically accurate when it comes to Shakespeare at the minute, because at the end of the day, you are literally putting women out of work.
Yeah, no,
you're creating a disparity
true.
There, and you're making it so women are losing opportunities in terms
so
of
so if it was an all-female cast, what would we think?
I mean, personally, I think the thing is, in this play specifically, it's women who are being demeaned and oppressed, so having an all-female cast
would
that,
be unusual. I think the play is, I mean,
we can't change
so, yeah, there's so much that is at fault within Taming of the Shrew. Mm. Like, any time you've seen anything that's called itself an adaptation of Taming of the Shrew, it's changed it so much. And the ones that haven't changed it, like, there's the Elizabeth Taylor and Richard Burton one, it's trash. It's like, it's just not, it's just because you, I don't know, there's many reasons why people don't like it, but people, you know, yeah.
It continues, nonetheless. Yeah. It continues.
I don't know. I love that play, though.